He is a person steeped in the wisdom of the ages. And so please join me in welcoming Pablo this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, John, for a very nice introduction or presentation as usual. And welcome all those who are joining us here and also all those who are on the internet. Part of what I do here in the Theosophical Society is to give talks, but I'm just a student, as we all are, you know, and I always liked the idea of communicating to people the little understanding and the doubts that we have so that we can all grow together. And what I'm going to share with you today is from that point of view. This is my experience. This is a little of what I studied and understood, and a little of what I actually see in my daily life. And I hope it may help or contribute to your spiritual life, but it's not said from any point of authority or anything. We are all treading the path, and we all learn from each other. So usually when approaching essential issues or topics in human life, there are two aspects. There is the theory behind, and there is the actual practice. Theories are many in different traditions, religions. In many aspects, they are similar. In many others, they are different. But ultimately speaking, what is really important is what we do with our life. So the theory gives a framework for our practice. And some people feel inspired by a certain approach. Some other people may feel inspired by a different approach. So the theory is useful in the sense of inspiring us or giving us some tools. But what is really important is a practice. That's why in the Theosophical Society, although there are teachings that we call theosophical teachings, we don't promote only a particular view, and we try to study the different traditions in a comparative way. Tonight, I'm going to present this in particular from the theosophical point of view, but as you are going to see, the practice, as in any tradition, is pretty universal. You can divest the practice from any particular theory. To a large extent, of course, there is always a certain approach, as I was saying, from different traditions. But I want to emphasize that because sometimes in the spiritual path, and what happens with many religions is that if we get hung on the ways we play in things, we may generate conflict between religions. And we see in the world, unfortunately, there are religious wars. But if we can see beyond and say, okay, this is an approach, but what we are really teaching is very similar in all traditions, spiritual traditions. If we can put our emphasis on that, then spirituality really is a force of to unite humanity. Otherwise, religions sometimes become a way of separating humanity. So again, this particular approach is just that, an approach. To begin, you know, the emotions are a very important aspect of our lives. And probably many people feel that emotions is the aspect that is less in control in their lives. Because we think we control our thoughts. And I would say we think we do, because as soon as we want to keep our mind in silence, we see that our mind tends to keep thinking. But at any rate, we feel we have a certain control on our thoughts, and also we think we control our actions. But when it comes to emotions, many times there is this feeling, especially in people who try to lead a spiritual life, there is this feeling of conflict. Conflict between what I'm feeling and what I want to do. In people who are not worried about spirituality or morality, what they feel it's fine. It's what they are. It's the, in many people, there is not this concept of maybe what you are feeling is not right or you shouldn't. But in people who follow the spiritual path, this is a major source of conflict and suffering. So I think addressing the topic of emotions is vital for the spiritual practice. Now, to give you, as I was saying, a reference, a theory from which we are going to approach this subject, let me explain how the theosophical view sees the human being, what a human being is. Of course, the description of what a human being is very complex. Some traditions go into more or less details about our constitution, but I will approach a more simplified view just with the details that are necessary for our particular subject. But let us start. The idea in the theosophical view is that there is a center of consciousness which, during the human experience, is individualized. But this is a conditioned center of consciousness because in theosophy, there is this view of consciousness as being one in the universe, and it expresses in different sentient beings in different ways. So the particular expression of consciousness through you is a conditioned expression of that universal consciousness. That universal consciousness is not personal. It doesn't have the qualities that we attach to ourselves. It is a consciousness that, in the theosophical view, cannot be defined neither as self nor as non-self, because it's something that is neither or is both at the same time. So we are not going to deal too much with the metaphysics of this, but just because we are familiar with the idea of spirit or something spiritual, let us call that consciousness a spiritual consciousness. Again, don't think of this consciousness as a personal consciousness. But that's the core of a human being while the person is a human being. Then that consciousness is surrounded by a mental field, what sometimes is called in the theosophical view, the mental body. Now, this mental body is the source of thinking. It's through this mental body that center of consciousness experiences the mental world, the mental dimension. Now, there is another aspect surrounding, this is just a diagram it's a metaphor. It's not that this is necessarily like this, but let us say surrounding that consciousness, there is another field that is the emotional field or the emotional body. And this is the dimension of feeling. And then there is another dimension that is the physical. And this is the physical body that we all are aware of. And this is the vehicle for acting. So, briefly explained, those are like different aspects in a human being. Now, this emotional body is a vehicle of expression of consciousness. And that vehicle of expression can be modified. Just as the physical body, how is the physical body formed? It is formed through what we eat. Basically, our body is the food we eat. So according to what quality of food we eat is what quality of body, physical body, we have. This emotional body is formed by the emotions we feel. So according to the kind of emotions we feel, is the kind of emotional body we have. If we are constantly feeling negative emotions, we will have a diseased emotional body. If we feel positive emotions, we will have a healthy emotional body. Now, this emotional body has two characteristics or two aspects. It has a consciousness of its own, just as the physical body. You know, our body is not an inert vehicle of consciousness. It has cells, and the cells, in the theosophical view, have their own consciousness. Not, of course, a mental consciousness as we know it. But even in medicine, they will talk about, you know, the memory of the cells, the intelligence of the cells. The idea is that the body has its own consciousness. And, for example, when we say that we like a certain food, it's not necessarily that we like it. Our body likes that particular food, or a particular weather, or a particular... It is the body that has a tendency to like certain things. So the body has a consciousness of its own. The body does the digestion. It is not our mental consciousness that does it. We don't know what is going on there, but the body knows how to do the digestion. Well, something similar happens with the emotional body. The emotional body has a consciousness of its own. Now, the problem is that we are identified with the emotional body. But when we are facing a situation and we have an emotional reaction, that emotional reaction is a reaction from the emotional body, not from the consciousness, that this consciousness that is at the center that we are talking about. Just as when you eat something that is not good and you have a stomachache, that's something that relates to the body, and your consciousness notices it, but it's not producing that. In the same way, the emotional reactions belong to the emotional body, which has its own particular consciousness. In theosophy, we call that desire elemental. Elemental in the sense that the consciousness that the emotional body has is very elemental, very simple, primitive in a sense. You know, in the theosophical view, as I said, everything has consciousness, not mental consciousness. Everything has a kind of consciousness. We define consciousness as the ability to respond to the environment. So, for example, when we faint, we don't have physical consciousness. An animal, it has consciousness because it can respond to the environment. The same with plants. They know where the sun is. Of course, the consciousness of a plant is much more primitive or simple than the consciousness in a human being. But that's what we mean by consciousness, the ability to respond to the environment. So this emotional body has a very elemental consciousness, which is related to what we call desires. The experience of this emotional consciousness is what we call desires. So this emotional body is the source of desires, passions. That's one aspect of the emotional body. I will talk about a different aspect also. But one aspect is the source of the animalistic aspect in ourselves. The more physiological, sometimes in science they say, you know, the instinctive aspect of ourselves. Because animals also have an emotional body. But an animal is not associated with a mind. So an animal will kill when the animal is hungry, or will reproduce when the season comes. All these desires, emotions, passions are natural in an animal. But in a human being, when we add the ability to think, to remember, to project into the future, then this emotional aspect becomes much more complex, because now we can kill not to eat. We can kill just because we don't like a person. Or we can be, you know, we can project in the future what we want, and we can exploit people, or we can be ambitious. So the mental element that is added in a human being makes the emotional aspect much more complex. Something that is normal, natural in animals now becomes much, much more complex. So I was saying that the emotional body has still that inheritance from the animal, which is that desire elemental consciousness. Another aspect of the emotional body is that it is the vehicle for the higher emotions or spiritual emotions. You know, emotions like love, compassion, or peace, all emotions that we would call spiritual or positive, in the theosophical view, they are originated from this more pure aspect of consciousness, and they are expressed through our mind and through our emotions. So the emotional body can do two things. It is the source of desires and passions and negative emotions, and it is the vehicle for the higher emotions that come from that state of consciousness which is clear, which can see things as they are. So if a person has an emotional body that is made by negative emotions, that emotional body will tend to produce those negative emotions during daily life and will have a hard time reproducing the higher emotions. Even though the higher emotions or the spiritual aspect is in a human being, in the theosophical view, it doesn't necessarily express through us because the vehicle of expression is not right or is not in tune with that. It's just like if you are a great violinist and you get a violin that is very bad, that it doesn't work properly. Even if you know how to play the violin, you cannot get, you know, a harmonious melody. So two things are necessary, that you know how to play the violin and that you have a good violin. So two things are necessary, and this is what we are going to see in the practice. But that consciousness knows how to deal with emotions, and also that the emotional body is in tune with that purer aspect of consciousness. So the idea is that when we get an impact from the outside, that affects the vehicles of consciousness, the bodies. Let's suppose we are walking, and then we are walking with our daughter or little sister, and we trip and we both fall. Now, my physical body will be hurt. If I follow what the physical body wants, the physical body just wants to stay there, you know, with the hurt. But what consciousness does is, normally, is to get up and see if your daughter is fine. So the impact from the outside will produce a reaction, a physical reaction, and your consciousness can choose whether to follow the physical reaction or to do something that you think is right or necessary. The same with the emotional vehicle. Something happens. Somebody says something that is not nice to you. Your emotional body will react to that because it has its own consciousness. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to follow the reaction of the emotional body, or can you choose not to follow that reaction? So my point here is that there are these two elements always in the human being. There is the element that belongs to the vehicle of consciousness, to the physical body, to the emotional body, or even to the mental body. And there is the element of consciousness, which can be dragged by the physical or emotional or mental reaction, or can remain quiet and in a state of equanimity. So the work, the task that we have ahead is twofold. First is to purify that emotional body. Because if my emotional body is predominant in negative emotions, then when there is an external impact, that emotional body will naturally react in a negative way, with aggression or with guilt or with whatever emotions are there. So one task is to try to purify that so that, remember that I said, according to what we feel is how we build this emotional body. If we can start nourishing positive emotions, then the natural reaction of our emotional body will not be so negative. So that is one task. And the other task is to learn at the level of consciousness that we are not the emotions, and we are not the body or the mind, but let us focus on the emotions. and that we can stop and decide what the right thing to do is. So this is like a horse. You know, if you are riding a horse, you can be a great rider. Now, if you get a horse that is not tamed, it will take a lot of effort for you to be able to go in the direction that you have to go, because the horse is trying to go its own way. If you are given a very good horse, then you can go anywhere. So even if at the level of consciousness, you have the realization that you are not the emotions and you are poised in that aspect that is beyond the motion of thoughts, emotions, and physical sensations, if you have a negative vehicle of consciousness, you will have a hard time trying to control it or to lead it in the right way. So we need both things. We need a receptive emotional body and we need an enlightened consciousness. Now, the thing is that for the process of purifying the emotions, something that is important is to see where your conscious, what's the seat of your consciousness. Many people are completely identified with their emotions, with their feelings. If they feel something, that's what they are. And they would never do something against their feelings. And if they are compelled to do something against their feelings because of the law that don't let them do something, or because they are at work and if they do something, they will be fired, or for whatever reason, if they are compelled to control their emotions, what happens is this process of repression that psychology knows about. You know, all these emotions cannot express, and they are repressed. And that produces a lot of psychological problems. So these people, these kind of people, are at the level of complete identification with the emotions. Now, as the person matures, as the person begins to try to inquire into who we are and try to practice a spiritual life, the seat of consciousness may be raised to the mental level. And I think that that's pretty much where most spiritual practitioners are. And that's where the conflict comes. You know, we have these emotions, we recognize we are not the emotions, or that we shouldn't let the emotions rule our life. So that means that we are starting to identify with our mental consciousness. But still, for a long time, the emotional aspect drags the mental consciousness. And many times the emotional reaction overrules the mental perception that we shouldn't do a certain thing, that this is not positive. But with practice, we can establish our consciousness at the mental level, and then the emotional body has less and less control over our decisions. And eventually, in the theosophical view, we can go even beyond that. And we can recognize that we are not even the thinker, the mind, that there is a point of silence, a place of silence, which is beyond the body, the emotions, and the process of thinking. At that point, we have the ability of beginning to perceive things as they really are, and not as our mind wants to interpret them. So there is a progression by which our consciousness begins to be centered on subtler and subtler aspects of our nature. But today we are going to be focused on our emotional aspect and how we can deal with it, which means that we are already, you know, naturally centering our consciousness at least at the mental level, because now we are starting to question how we feel in certain occasions. So let me say something about this desire elemental or this emotional energy. You know, we wouldn't say that our cells, physical cells, have any sense of morality. A cancer, for example, is a group of cells that begin to reproduce without any boundaries until they take over the body and they kill the body. Now, we wouldn't say that the cells were trying to do something bad. You know, they had their own consciousness, but it's not a mental consciousness where there is morality. They are just a form of life. Now, our emotional body, the elementals that form our emotional body, also have no morality. A negative emotion is just an emotion for them. Now, for us, a negative emotion may be a cause of suffering for us as a center of consciousness. But that emotion itself, let's say the emotion of anger, is a particular elemental. And in the theosophical view, this elemental consciousness is in a process of becoming grosser and grosser. It's in a process of becoming more physical. So there are a negative emotion in ourselves, when it is felt by us, begins to feed from our consciousness. You know, because our consciousness is identified with it, we give it our vitality. So when there is this negative emotion in ourselves, if we watch, we can see that there is a certain pleasure there. Why do we criticize if we know that that is not good? Why do we harbor angry thoughts if we know that that is not good? If we see, if we observe, we can see that there is a certain pleasure there. Because every time that we identify with an emotion, we are giving more life to that particular elemental consciousness or elemental energy. And as I said, the feeling itself has no morality. So when you go through life and something bad happens to you and there is a negative emotion, that is a natural response at the emotional level. That is not a sin. That is not something bad in itself. Now, if you are dragged by that negative emotion, then that will be something that will produce problems to your consciousness. Basically, karmic suffering, and we learn from that. So ultimately speaking, it's not, you know, absolutely bad. But we are in this process of trying to go beyond this circle of suffering and pleasure. So let's say having negative emotions is not good for us. But the emotion in itself is perfectly fine. It's a form of consciousness in nature. To me, this is important because if you are going to watch your emotions, and we are going to see that that is important in the practice, we have to get rid of this idea of guilt. Why am I feeling this emotion? If you have this idea of guilt, then you cannot watch your emotions because you have an emotional reaction to the negative emotion. If you understand my emotional body is naturally reacting, if I hit you on your physical body, you will feel the pain. And you are not going to say, why am I feeling pain? Of course you are feeling pain. That's natural. It's a natural physical reaction. If somebody does something that hurts you emotionally, you will feel a negative emotion. Because it's not you, it's the emotional body that naturally reacts to that. Now the problem is, if you hit me physically, do I let my consciousness be dragged by the physical reaction and hit you back? So we are not questioning the fact of feeling the pain. What we are questioning is the fact of acting on that feeling the pain. So again, emotionally, if somebody does something that hurts you, of course you will feel a negative emotion. Now, are you going to act on that, or what can you do about it? Eventually, as we are going to see with the purification of the emotional body, less and less things can really hurt you. But we are going to get there later. Now, the idea is that as we feel a certain emotion, we create patterns. You know, if we constantly feel guilt or anger or whatever emotion or positive emotions, we create patterns in our emotional body. So now, these patterns are with a lot of vitality. So when something happens, those patterns tend to be activated. You know, sometimes in the theosophical view, they are called skandhas. This is from the Buddhist tradition. There are different skandhas. Usually in the theosophical view, when we say skandhas, we are talking more about psychic skandhas.
and these psychic habits. So if you have these psychic habits of anger, when something happens and affects you emotionally, there will be a natural tendency to react with anger. Actually, even at the level of brain, a psychic habit begins to reshape the brain so that the brain itself is wired to react in a certain way. So what we need to do is to start, you know, dissolving the negative habits, and that will also produce a rewiring of the brain. And this will take time, because anything in nature wants to survive. Emotional patterns also want to survive. So they will try to survive. Again, not mentally saying, you are trying to destroy me, I will survive. No, it is a natural tendency in nature. Otherwise, the universe couldn't be held working if things don't have the tendency to preserve themselves. So the emotional reactions tend to protect themselves and to preserve themselves. And you have to be ready for that, because when you try to change something, we need perseverance. Everything needs some time to be able to be changed. So if we are going to describe the, if I were to describe the steps in this process of mastering our emotions, I would say that, you know, the bottom line is when we feel an emotion and we just react unconsciously. After we react, we may say, I should not have done that, or that was bad, or we may justify it, whatever we do. But that's the bottom line. There is an emotion, we are dragged unconsciously into it. The first step is to try to develop awareness, to try to develop the ability to notice that we are reacting. At the beginning, that awareness probably is not going to be strong enough to produce a change at the emotional level. We will notice that we get angry, and we will get angry, and we will be dragged by that anger. But there is a first step. There is this process of awareness. As we keep trying to practice this, and we are going to see some approaches to the practice, but as we keep trying to work on this, there comes a point where we can feel the emotions, but we can decide not to react. So somebody does something to us. We get angry, and we can control the reaction. That is a second step. Now, this is very different from the repression in psychology. Repression is when it's a process that is unconscious. It's not a voluntary process. So consciousness is not able to deal with something and automatically puts it back, you know, in the unconscious. This process that we are talking about is a very conscious process of saying, I'm not going to be dragged by this reaction. And that generates willpower as opposed to this repression. So as you work on yourself, you will be able to stop the reactions. Of course, at the beginning, you will be able to stop weaker reactions, but when something, you know, more, or when something pushes your buttons, as sometimes it is called, you know, you will react anyway. But little by little, you begin to get more control on your reactions. Still, you feel all those reactions. But if you keep working on that, there is another step where you are actually able to remain calm. There is something that is happening, and you can get to a point where you can stop even the reaction. You know, you feel uncomfortable, but you don't let this process of anger develop. When you get to that point, you are very close to have a good control on the emotions. When you get to the point where you can really remain calm among the pressure of the environment, then the next step is the ability to produce the opposite emotion. So somebody is not being nice to you, and if you have the ability to remain calm, you can start trying to produce even the opposite emotion and generate compassion or love for the person. At the beginning, you can do it only, for example, in meditation, when you are not being challenged. You can think of a person you have a difficult relationship with, and you can actually feel love and compassion for the person. Then when you deal with the person, maybe, you know, it is more difficult, but at least you have the ability not to react. But little by little, we can get even to the point of genuinely producing the opposite reaction. So that is the scope of, you know, mastering the reactions. We can get to a point where we can become a force of positive influence for everybody. But this is a gradual process. We shouldn't be ambitious in the spiritual path. We are where we are, and we have to work with what we have in hand. And this may take several lives to develop, or only one. That doesn't matter. Time is an illusion. If we do what we have to do, you know, sincerely now, we are doing what is expected from us, so to say. So the first one was just we are dragged unconsciously in the emotion. The second step is we begin to be aware of it, even though we cannot control it. The next step that happens is that we can control the external reaction, although we still feel everything, but at least we are not dragged into an external expression. Then we are able to remain calm. And finally, we are able to produce the opposite emotion. And in some aspects, as you grow into this, you will see that you can do it with a certain field of life or a certain group of emotions. And in another group of emotions, you are, you know, very down in the process, because we are living things. So that is something that is very a living, you know, process. It's not something that we grow in all the aspects of our nature. So let us see what to do, how to go through this process that I just described. I don't think that a direct blow-by-blow struggle with the emotions is positive. I don't think that that necessarily produces good results. What I found, and also in a lot of literature is recommended, but what I found more effective is first to stop nourishing the negative emotions. That is the first step. Stop nourishing negative emotions. This is like a mental diet, and it feels exactly like a diet. So you say, okay, I will work on not criticizing, not saying harsh words. And you will see that you are in a situation where people are criticizing, and you have this thirst for engaging into it. And you will go through all these steps that I was describing. At the beginning, you won't even notice it. You know, you will just fall into that. If you are trying to practice this, then that will bring some awareness. And afterwards, you will say, oh, I didn't even notice it, and I fell into that. Okay, next time, I'll try to be aware. So you will go through this, and at a certain point, you will find yourself aware when you are actually, you know, gossiping. And then little by little, you with the practice, you can move into this process that I described. But the first step is don't nourish negative emotions. Even when you are by yourself, you are doing the dishes, and your mind is thinking about this person or this situation. When we do that, we think, well, it's just thinking, it's just feeling. I'm not doing any harm to anybody. But we have to remember that what we feel is shaping our emotional body. So we are actually doing a damage, if we want to see it in that way, to ourselves. We are eating bad food, bad emotional food. So it is important to pay attention to this. Stop nourishing negative emotions. How? Well, the best approach is to be aware of them. But this is not something that we can do always. You know, if you feel a negative emotion and you can be aware of it and let the emotion express itself, because it's an elemental, remember, it's not you, it's your emotional body. So you say, okay, I will watch this emotion. That's a form of meditation. You start watching it, and if you can watch it without identifying with it, that awareness, little by little, deprives that elemental from the vitality that is sucking from you. Now, when the emotions are too strong, it's very difficult to watch it in this way, because we notice that once and again we get drawn into the emotion, and all of a sudden we are thinking and feeling all that. So you can try that, But if the emotion is too strong, you may have to do something different. Also, sometimes we don't have the energy. You will see that to be aware requires quite a bit of energy. If it is the end of the day, you are tired, you feel these emotions, you try to watch them and you are exhausted, you don't have the energy. So there are moments or emotions or situations where you cannot watch it. So what can you do? Well, I think the second best option, try to read something spiritual. If you can start thinking about something spiritual, think, but sometimes that's difficult if you are feeling negative emotions. Read something spiritual. If you have, you know, a device where you can listen, have some talks, spiritual talks, and listening to a spiritual talk, or, you know, put something on the TV, do something spiritual and shift your mind to that. Now, sometimes we cannot even do that. And I would say, okay, instead of dwelling in these negative emotions, distract yourself. Even watch TV. Of course, I'm saying this in the context of a person that is working on the spiritual path. You know, if you are not working on that, just watching TV, distracting yourself from what is going on inside of you is something that is actually negative. But if you are in this process, you know, it's better even to distract yourself at this point that you don't have the energy to deal with it than just dwelling in the negative emotion. Think of your garden, how it is going to be, you know, in the spring if you love your garden. Or think of whatever you have next. Distract yourself willingly, consciously. As I said, this is like a last recourse. First, try to be aware. Then try to think of spiritual things. Or ultimately speaking, if you cannot do any of that, just, you know, do something that puts your mind somewhere else. But you will see that if you have tried to follow a diet, it's a very similar process. And be ready to have to face this thirst for engaging into this emotion. Because the desire elemental is claiming for your vitality. It's claiming, it's in a sense like a parasite, you know, that lives off of you. So there will be this craving to give energy to the negative emotion. So you have to be ready for that. And when you feel it, recognize it as what it is. You know, it's a craving from this elemental consciousness. And you as a more complex form of consciousness can decide not to follow that. So the first aspect was to stop nourishing these negative emotions. And the second aspect in the practice is to try to grow actively in the positive aspect of life or spirituality. Start doing something. You know, sometimes it is said that the way you disperse the darkness is by producing light. So a strong growth in the good will naturally and automatically reduce the darkness. So you don't have to engage directly fighting a negative emotion. You stop nourishing it and you focus yourself on growing into the good aspect of life and human beings. And that will take care of the negative aspect. So for that, we have, you know, in the Theosophical Society, we usually recommend like three avenues. Study of spiritual material, meditation, and service. So study, it's more or less what I was saying before. When you start putting your mind on spiritual things, then you start rearranging your mental body, because again, the mental body, how do we shape the mental body? By what we are thinking about during the day. So if we are thinking about things that are connected to the negative emotions or to what is selfish or to what is self-centered, then we are attracting these elementals that are the cause of negative thoughts. If you start thinking of spirituality and studying and all that, you begin to attract elementals that will respond more readily to spiritual feelings. Again, remember that there are two aspects. I'm focusing right now into purifying the vehicles of consciousness. Now, you as a consciousness have to learn to separate yourself from these aspects. So the two things go always together, but there are these two different aspects. So, for example, something that is important in this is to try to purify your desires. In the sense that if we desire are mainly material things are connected to our more personal aspect, personal nature. For example, if we desire anything that is material, we need a certain amount of money, a certain, you know, house, a certain car. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about desire as a form of trying to get emotional satisfaction. So anything that is material produces conflict. And not because the material is something bad, but because naturally, for example, a country is really rich because it's using more resources than the country that is next to it that uses less resources. If you have something, since the resources are limited, if you get something, you are taking that away from somebody else. In the capitalistic view, they say, well, that's perfectly natural. You know, that's the way it is. But from a spiritual point of view, we need a certain amount of material things, but material things produce this conflict. You take, because they are limited, you take something and you take it away from somebody else. This is not the same with more abstract possessions. For example, knowledge. The more knowledge you have, you are not taking that knowledge away from somebody else. On the contrary, you have knowledge. If you share it, that produces more knowledge in other people also. So the more knowledge you have, if you use it in the right way, you can produce more knowledge in other people without losing that knowledge yourself. That doesn't happen with money. You have a lot of money. If you give it to other people, you are taking it away from you because material things are limited. With knowledge, with love, with anything that is more abstract, the more you get, you are not taking it away from others and you can actually reproduce it in others. So we should start trying to drift our desires from the material things to more abstract aspects, which in the spiritual path would be, you know, knowledge to be able to lead a better life. It can be power in the sense of having the power to help. All these more abstract aspects, if you begin to try to relate to that, that will take away the vitality from the lower desires to something more abstract. Eventually, we have to even transcend that because my search for knowledge can be also very selfish. And even though I may not be damaging another person, I may still be vitalizing my conditioned consciousness, you know, my sense that I am something different from the rest. So eventually, we can go even, or we should go even beyond the search for abstract things. But this is something, I don't know if it may sound a little abstract, but this is something that actually has an impact on consciousness. As we shift our desires from the material to the more abstract, then our emotions begin to be subtler also. So that is also something important. One aspect I was saying, begin to try to put your mind on positive things, spirituality, and the second, try to purify your desires. Then the practice of meditation is also important. Meditation, as probably most of us know, is a moment where we can go inside and there are different techniques of meditation, but it's a moment where we retreat from the world with all the challenges of the world, and we try to nourish something that will be important in our daily life. That something may be awareness, that something may be understanding, maybe the ability to feel a certain thing when you are trying to produce positive emotions and share those emotions with others. So in meditation, you retreat from the world when you are not being challenged, and you try to produce something that is important from the spiritual point of view. And then when you go into life, you try to retain that. And with the practice, you know, you develop the skill. It's a skill as with anything else. So study is important, meditation is important. And then service, you know, do something for other people. That other people may be your family, maybe friends, maybe at work. It depends on what kind of life you lead, what your environment is. But many people live their life basically centered on what they want. And that centralization of consciousness also fuels the negative emotions, because the negative emotions are always personal. You know, why did this happen to me, or why did that person say that to me? So as we do something where we are thinking of the welfare of other people, we begin to purify also our emotional body. So study, meditation, and service are three steps that are very important in the purification of the emotional body. So to summarize this, and then we can go to a question and answers and comments. Remember that you are not the emotions. The emotions are the natural response of an aspect of yourself, the emotional aspect in yourself. So you are not necessarily, you can stop being dragged by the emotions. You can be independent from the emotions. For that, we need the practice of first trying to be aware of the emotional reaction, then trying to check the reaction, the external reaction, even though the internal reaction is there. Then we begin to learn how to remain calm. And finally, we can learn how to produce the opposite reaction. And then for this, we need to stop nourishing the negative emotions and then trying to actively grow into the positive aspect of life through study, meditation, and service. So that's more or less what I wanted to share with you. Of course, there is much more that we can talk about, but I think this can give some hints for the practice. And now we could go into the part of question and answers or comments, you know, a discussion about this. And if you are not, you know, feel free to say, I don't agree on this or whatever. The idea is to share and try to inquire into this.
Thank you very much, Pablo. If anyone does have questions, either people here in the audience or online, well, for the people here in the audience, if you have a question, just put up your hands. I'll bring you the microphone, and we will also take questions from online. I'll take this one here first.
What is the role of mindfulness come into helping to evaporate and allow emotional bodies and elementals to dissolve just by simply witnessing?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The way I see it, we have a reaction and we have our consciousness. Of course, when we talk in this way, we are materializing things that are subtler. But just to have a mental concept, we have the reaction, we have the emotion. When we are identified with the emotional reaction, it's like we plug the emotions in. You know, this is a source of energy. Consciousness is a source of energy. So this is a reaction. The emotional reaction has its own vitality because of all the times that we felt that emotion. Now, when this emotion is activated by an external impact and we identify with the emotion, then we are plugging the emotion in. And that emotion is taking the energy from consciousness. Now, when we become mindful, when we witness the process, what we are actually doing is breaking this connection, because we are not identified with the emotions. It's just like when you watch TV. If you watch TV and you are identified with the actor there, something bad happens to the actor and you cry. Why do you cry? First, he's an actor, it has nothing to do with you, but the identification produces this, you know, this ability to reproduce the same that is happening there. Identification is a very strong force. Now, if you watch the movie and you say, oh, that's not blood, it's just ketchup, and you are not identified with that, you don't feel what happens there. So, in a more spiritual sense, when we can watch the emotion without being identified with it, then we are not giving more energy to the emotions. Now, these emotions, as I said, are habits that they have their own particular amount of energy that we already gave in the past. So even if you watch it, you are not going to be able to dissolve it right away in one instance of watching it. This emotion, if you, just to say, if you nourish that reaction 100 times, will probably go off 100 times. Now, if you watch it, you know, or let's say 10 times, if you watch it those 10 times, then at the end of the process, that emotion will be gone. Now, if we don't watch it, then we keep adding energy to it. So be patient, because we don't know how much vitality the different psychic habits have, but as you begin to watch it, they begin to wane, you know, to be weaker. So I think that's the one of the functions of awareness. There are others, but I would point out to that in relation to this topic.
We have a question online. My question has to do with dealing with chronically negative people and the profoundly adverse effects of their energy. When you find that sending them light and healing doesn't work, and you're in danger of being dragged down to their vibrational level, what steps can you take to psychically shield yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a difficult situation. And I think probably most of us are in that kind of situation in one way or the other. Some are more difficult, you know, than others. But when you send love to a person, for example, with whom you have a problem, that may not necessarily change the person. If people were so easily to be changed, then enlightened beings as a Buddha and Jesus, they would have changed the world. Now, it does help, you know, it does help to a certain extent, but that person has its own, his or her own habits, and, you know, it's not that we are gods that can transform people. But sending them love also is a protection for yourself. Because when that person does something to you and you react and you identify yourself with the reaction, the worst part in it is that you are fortifying that negative emotion in yourself. You are also affecting the other person. You know, when we feel something, we affect ourselves and we affect the environment. But the idea is that why did the most of the spiritual teachers say you cannot end hate by hate? You can only end hate by love. It's because it's true. If you hate back, you are just hurting yourself. Now, of course, it is difficult when a person is really affecting your life and all that. It is difficult to generate love for the person. Maybe you can do it in meditation, you know, when you calm down and you harmonize yourself, and then you are able to send that love. Some people, or in some situations, you may not even able to do that because the emotional reaction is too strong. But in that case, what I would say is, you know, the same that I said during the talk, do your best. Do your best not to nourish those emotions. You know, when you are with that person, if that person hurts you, if you have the possibility of going, you know, to going away for a little bit and watch the emotional reaction, do it. Or do the best you can in the situation. And then afterwards, try not to let all that go on in your mind. You know, if you go back home and all that is in your mind, try to watch it. If it is too strong, try to listen to a spiritual talk or read something. If you cannot even do that, try to distract yourself. But stop nourishing that, you know, that problem. And it's a question of keep trying to do it. If you believe that there is something like karma, if you believe that there is a process of an order behind everything, all this that happens is really intended to generate in you a skill, an ability. For example, if you want to develop your muscles, how do it? You do it by opposing a resistance. You try to lift a weight that is trying to stay down. So at the beginning, you may not be able to lift it, but little by little, you are able to do it. So these difficult situations is the way that we develop a skill. We try it, and we are unable to do it. What do? You try to lift the weight, you say, oh, no, I can't. And you give up, then you don't develop anything. But if you try, and you try little by little, you develop the ability. So the idea is that difficult situations are the way that we develop a skill. And when the karma that produced that situation is over, the situation will change. If we really believe in karma, we have to trust that that situation will produce something good, spiritually speaking. It will be hard, it will be unpleasant, but if you have the confidence, then you can keep trying. You know, that's the way I try to face things and that you find in books. It's not that you can do something, or I don't think you can do anything that is magical, but keep trying to do it and try not to nourish it too much.
Well, we have one more question online while the public is waiting. It's been said it takes 30 days to break a habit, approximately 30 days, or make a new one. Does this apply to trying to dissolve a particular emotion if one is diligent about it?
I don't know, it takes me years. I guess it depends. It depends on how deep the habit, the pattern is. Some things really take years. Some things are more superficial, and if you are diligently working on it, you can get rid of it. But I don't know. I think it's tricky to think in terms of time, because then comes the idea of trying to attain a goal and the frustration if you think you are not attaining it and the impatience. And, you know, time is an illusion. It's like saying you have a flower. The flower has a process of growing, blooming, and it will bloom in its own time. If you are trying to see the flower right away, you only will get frustrated because it's not able to bloom when you want to. So just, you know, we have to work on what we are at the moment and let the law produce the result. We are just putting the cause and the law produces the result. Trust in the law and just, you know, work on yourself. I couldn't say any particular time because I think habits are very different one from the other.
I'm seeing a lot of similarities between the concept of skandhas, as you called it, and science's term neuroplasticity, mm-hmm. where you can strengthen or weaken certain neural pathways, and it's like, which one do you feed? You know, which. Mm-hmm. But basically, my question is, in the Theosophy's view, does the mental body react first to a trigger, and then the emotional body, and how do those two interact? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, the idea of putting it in this way is for the purpose of communicating this, but in actuality, we are all this at the same time. You know, an emotion affects the body, affects the mind. A thought affects the emotions, the body. So sometimes this is triggered by our mind, by an idea. You know, something happens, and you have the idea that that is wrong, and then that will trigger an emotion. The person next to you don't have that idea that thing was wrong, and it's not going to have any emotional reaction. And sometimes it's the opposite. There is some emotional happening, and then your mind begins to dwell on it. So it's very, you know, it's not a structure. It's something that varies according to the situation. So although we talk about them as different, at a practical level, they all work together and they all are interrelated. And regarding the brain is again a brain pathway, if we want to call it in that way, is just the physical manifestation of a psychic skanda. So it's just the same on different levels. So the psychic skanda may be more mental or more emotional, but it's like different aspects of the same thing. So when we want to break a brain pattern, we work on the emotional pattern or the mental pattern. The idea is in theosophy that the physical is like the last link in the chain of causation. So if the physical is actually produced by our mental and emotional way of being. And it was produced in previous lives, and what we do now will, you know, produce the next one if you believe in reincarnation. But anyway, we can see that things begin at a psychic level, and then they impact on the body. But also, that doesn't mean that the body cannot affect the mind. You know, it's all interrelated.
We have one more question online. Is there a difference in cancers between ones forming tumors by cells not dying in a timely manner and those forming tumors from rapidly reproducing cells? Can there be an emotional difference?
The relationship between, you know, the emotional patterns and the physical illnesses, it's very complex because, at least from the theosophical view that takes into consideration reincarnation, this body is the result of a long past as well as the present. So many times the present is not strong enough to change the past. It's like even in one single life, you were not responsible while you were a teenager and you, you know, had a very bad health habits, and then when you are older, you may try to be healthy, and that will help, but that may not be enough for you not to have the consequences of the, you know, the kind of life that you had before. So the present always influences what we are, but there is also a past that may be very heavy or very big, and your present effort may not be really, you know, enough to counteract something. So sometimes illnesses are the result from past actions, not from present actions. I think that idea that is very spread in the New Age, that every illness is the result of the pattern that is wrong in yourself right now, is tricky. Because then when people get sick, on top of that illness, they have this sense of guilt and they say, oh, I'm sick because I'm doing something wrong right now, and I thought that I was spiritual or that I'm doing my best, and yet I am sick. And that could be something that was generated, you know, many lives ago in the past. So the human being is very complex, and when we draw fast and simple conclusions, usually they are wrong or they are not really true. So I guess, you know, we have enlightened beings or people who are regarded as enlightened beings that died with cancer. You know, you have Jiddu Krishnamurti, Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, they all died with cancer. And you say, if you think that everything depends on your present, you say, how? Or many, you know, you have many very spiritual people that have all kinds of illnesses. That's something that belongs to the body and to the past, and not necessarily to the present. So I don't know if there is a difference, you know, between these two kinds of cancer, but I wouldn't connect them necessarily with the present emotional state. That being said, sometimes if we are very negative, that can produce an illness in the present also, but it's not always the cause of illnesses.
In looking at this pattern of the connection between the consciousness and the emotion and the idea of disconnecting through witnessing and the fact that it won't dissolve right away, I think that's very useful for us to remember that, yeah, it's not magic, mm-hmm. but it's powerful. It's still very powerful to do that detaching. What I'm wondering is, does theosophy or do you recognize any energetic healing type practices that can help facilitate the dissolving of these energetic skandhas or psychic skandhas, such as mm-hmm. vibrational healing or other energetic methods that can help us not speed it up to the magical point or not sidestep mm-hmm. the conscious work that's involved, but can help facilitate the mm-hmm. process of dissolution?
Yeah, well, my view about this, and again, you know, this is my personal view, but I think healing helps to make a particular pattern less strong. Now, when we have a reaction, there are two aspects, the manifestation and the seed for that manifestation. I think that, for example, if a manifestation is too strong, then consciousness may not be strong enough to deal with it. So certain kinds of healing, they may help to reduce the reaction so that consciousness can more easily do something about it. But I don't think anything external will, you know, kill the seed. So, for example, in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, he says that the seed can be killed only through meditation. And by meditation, he defines meditation, the Sanskrit word dhyana. He defines meditation as a constant awareness of a particular object. So to me, he's talking about this mindfulness or awareness. So he says, through practice, through discipline, through trying, you know, to check your emotions, all that we were talking, you can reduce this manifestation and you can make it weaker. And also, I think through healing, you can also help in that aspect. But you can only kill the seed through meditation or by this state of witnessing. So I don't think healing can kill the seed, but it may help. It may help to lower to make the burden, you know, lighter. And I think with many healers, or I don't know if many, but with a number of them that I talk to, they many times say you can heal a person, but that person will produce again the same illness unless there is an active work to, you know, address the cause.
Okay. I think this may be our last question.
Pablo, just to throw another idea out there too, another point of view, I'd come across the idea that not illness or, you know, physical challenges can come from, say, if you want to use the term, say, the soul or the higher self chooses a challenge in the lifetime to experience just to see, you know, to spiritually grow, as opposed to it being a manifestation of something that a negative thing had happened in the past from karma. Just to throw that out there, see what you thought of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we go deep enough, the two things are the same, because we tend to think of negative karma as a punishment when there is not, it's not that at all. And it's just a process of growth of consciousness. But yeah, I would agree you can look at it in that way.
We have one last comment and then that will probably be the end.
I've run into a synchronistic situation. I had heard a little talk about happiness the other day, and twice in the past week I've run into this quote attributed to the Dalai Lama about goes along with the service aspect, and to make others happy, practice compassion. To be happy yourself, practice compassion. So mm-hmm. I think that just reinforces what we heard.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, Paula. And thank you very much, Pablo. maybe a show of appreciation.